Hey everyone, it's been a 007 back for another 10-minute movie review, except, as it seems to be the case recently, this is actually a TV review of Ripley, the new series on Netflix, written and directed by Steve Zaillian, who is a longtime writer for Martin Scorsese, films like The Gangs of New York, but also wrote and directed the superb TV show The Night Of. I am a great fan of Patricia Highsmith's amazing source novel. It's dark, it's nasty, it's slippery, it's one of the best crime procedurals ever written. And I love all of the adaptations, whether it's Plein Soleil, the amazing French film, the superlative Anthony Minghella film, The Talented Mr. Ripley, starring Jude Law in his arguably career best role. And I was so excited for this new adaptation. There can never be enough Ripley for me. Just a little spoiler warning here. I am going to discuss the plot. So if you haven't seen it yet, then this review is not for you. Go away, watch it, then come back, because I want to talk about the different choices that different filmmakers have made. The first and the biggest is the casting. And when I read that Andrew Scott had been cast in this role, because I know that he's in his 40s, I know him as the hot priest from Fleabag, more recently in a wonderfully quiet, modulated, powerful role in All of Us Strangers, which was an Oscar-nominated film. Because I knew his age, I figured they were adapting one of the later Ripley novels. Maybe one of the Ripley novels that was remade starring Dougray Scott and John Malkovich. But no, actually, this is a remake of the first Ripley novel, The Talented Mr. Ripley. And this is the first mistake I think that it has made, which is not to say that Andrew Scott is not superb in this. But if you think about the setup of The Talented Mr. Ripley, it's the contrast between two young men in their 20s. We have Dickie Greenleaf, who is handsome and he's rich and basically quite lazy and quite dumb. And he's living this dilettante life in Italy, post-World War II Italy. The US dollar goes a long way. He's living on his trust fund and he's in some little out-of-the-way seaside town pretending, aspiring to be a creative, as we'd say nowadays, just schmoozing around with his girlfriend Marge, who's another one of these rich American trust fund babies. And he's set up in contrast with our hero or anti-hero, Tom Ripley, who, when we meet him in New York at the start of the novel, is a really kind of down-at-heel con man who is multi-talented. He can forge checks. He can con people. He can imitate people. He's living on his wits. And he is kind of hardworking, even though that work is all illegal. And through a kind of mix-up that Tom exploits, he is sent by Dickie Greenleaf's father to go to Italy on the presumption that they're friends, which they're not, and to persuade Dickie to come back and start a job with the family firm, to sort of grow up and settle down. And I think that concept works if they're both in their 20s, because it's sort of like they've left university and Dickie's on a kind of extended gap year, as we might say now. And what was cute at 22 is no longer cute at 27. And I think it's important that all the main characters feel like contemporaries and feel like peers, so that Dickie and Tom, they're kind of like the doppelgangers, the yin and the yang. They have to feel of a piece. It helps if they look a little similar. And I think Jude Law, Matt Damon in the Minghella film achieved that quite well, that sort of Jude Law was the idealized, romanticized version, and Matt Damon was kind of still kind of good looking, could maybe lighten his hair and get away with looking a bit more like Jude Law, but they have to feel similar. And in this film, they don't. Andrew Scott looks nothing like Johnny Flynn, who plays Dickie Greenleaf. And Johnny Flynn is also in his 40s, early 40s. You might have seen him or remembered him from the most recent version of Emma or Operation Mincemeat. Decent enough looking guy, but he has none of the charisma, none of the romantic appeal of Jude Law. And kind of, again, what was cute at 27 or becoming less cute is really weirdly uncute in early 40s. And this life that is portrayed in Italy, I think, has to feel seductive in order for us to feel sympathy with Tom. Like, we have to go with Tom as people with no money and be seduced by the gorgeousness of traveling on the Greenleaf money in first class and going to Mongibello, here a real village of Atrani, and seeing this lavish lifestyle, having your own Italian house and having leisurely lunches and swimming in the sea and sailing on one's yacht. And I think that's what Anthony Minghella's film captured so beautifully, this idea that Tom is seduced not just by the beauty of Dickie himself, but by the lifestyle. And actually, the lifestyle here doesn't look that amazing. It actually looks really grungy. And that brings me to a second choice that I think is problematic. And that is that Steve Zaltzman has decided to shoot this miniseries in black and white. And I have to say, it's beautifully shot by Robert Elswit, who is one of, you know, the leading cinematographers of our time. He is famous for films such as There Will Be Blood and Good Night and Good Luck, which was another film, actually, a George Clooney-directed film shot in black and white. And, oh my goodness, Italy looks beautiful and sinister, and every shot, the framing is stunning. And Steve Zaltzman and, I'm conscious I'm probably pronouncing his name wrong, and Robert Elswit are really leaning into the film noir of it all. So what you get later on in most versions of Ripley, you get from the start here, which is that sinister, macabre feeling. We never get the sunshine of Atrani and Mongibello to be broken as we get into Rome and then San Remo and then into Venice, further and further north in Italy, and darker, rainier, gloomier over winter. So I think that's a misstep. I think we need to see the sunshine. We need to see the possibilities and the optimism of this amazing summer of love, where we have this trio where Tom is falling in love with Dickie, where Dickie is kind of amused and distracted by Tom. This chance of hope that is cruelly pulled away from Tom and results in the violence in the film and the novel's second act. We never get that because of the choice to shoot in black and white. So we have our two older actors playing Ripley and Greenleaf. The marginess is Dakota Fanning, an actress I really love. We've seen her recently also in Atrani, in literally the same shooting location, in The Equalizer 3, which actually I really loved as a movie. You can go listen to my review. I think she's fine here. She's given a lot less to do. The character isn't very filled out. And yeah, it's a bit disappointing. I feel she's really underused here. And of course, we don't have in this version all the things that Anthony Minghella did to sort of give her a doppelganger in the Cate Blanchett character. So it's a much smaller, tighter role, but Dakota Fanning's fine. The fourth person in this band of Americans abroad is Elliot Sumner playing Freddie Miles. And this is where I think the casting goes a little bit wrong. Again, not because Elliot Sumner isn't a good actor, but they are substantially younger than the rest of the cast. So where Andrew Scott's 47, I believe Elliot Sumner's 33, but looks substantially younger. I mean, I think they look probably mid to early 20s. And so when they meet in Rome, I just kind of didn't really believe they were peers. I didn't believe they were all friends. And the whole group just didn't coalesce. The other thing I didn't feel between this group was any kind of sexiness. I mean, I think we have to believe, don't we, that there's a sexual tension between Dickie and Tom. And also that, you know, at some point, one of the characters, I think Tom says to Dickie, you know, Marge loves you far more than you love her. That's the problem. And I never felt that Marge loved Dickie, and I never felt that Dickie was kind of shying away from it. I just feel that early kind of that act one in Atrani just isn't, the relationships aren't built out, and I didn't believe in them. And I didn't believe why Tom would be attracted to the lifestyle or the man of Dickie Greenleaf. Anyway, we get to Rome, we meet Freddie Miles. At some point, Dickie gets tired of Tom and wants to throw him off. They go to San Remo, violence ensues, and we then get into the meat of the book, which is a crime procedural. How is it that Tom is going to get away with these crimes? How is he going to impersonate Dickie, live off his money, forge the American Express traveler's checks? How is he going to explain why Freddie Miles has turned up dead? Because it seems to me that the motivation in this version, in this TV show, for Tom Ripley is neither love nor sexual attraction or jealousy towards Dickie Greenleaf, nor avarice. It's more being piqued, a sense of his amour propre being challenged by Dickie Greenleaf's dad, played by Kenneth Lonergan here, and by Freddie Miles, people who insult him, who call him a failure, for calling him irrelevant or small. Those are the ones who he goes after. And actually, the pivotal scene between Freddie Miles and Tom, which is so well done in The Mangala with Philip Seymour Hoffman, such a small cameo part, but so powerful. I miss him so much. Actually, this is where you see how good Elliot Sumner is, because it's played very differently, but it's still so sinister, so powerful. It's a really strong performance. I just wish that this actor had been in the same peer age range as Andrew Scott, because it feels like they're in two different movies. Anyway, the movie kind of winds through its police procedural. It's very well done. It takes too long. We do not need 8 episodes of this show. In fact, I suspect, because it's quite a slim novel, it's sort of, I think my paperback version is around 250 pages. You could probably read it in the time it takes to watch the TV show. We wind through. I really love the actor who plays the Italian Inspector Ravini, Maurizio Lombardi, I think does incredibly well. I really also like Bakeem Woodbine as McCarran, the private investigator in The Employee of the Greenleaf Family. There's also a really cheeky cameo by John Malkovich as Reeves Minow, who I guess is potentially setting this up for a sequel. So that's kind of cool. But I have to say, I was willing to just think to myself, well, you know what? This is something different, and they're making different choices to the ones maybe I would have made, but I can go with it because it looks gorgeous. There's interesting stuff being said about art, and Steve Zaliana is trying to make a point about Ripley being like Caravaggio and being inspired by him, a Renaissance artist who was Renaissance, probably earlier, who was on the run for murder. So there's a parallel drawn there. But I have to say that very unfortunately, in the final couple of episodes, I really feel that the show jumps the shark. In episode 8, it starts with a flashback to Caravaggio, which I would feel is just like, it's way too on the nose. And it's a clear case of a showrunner being given way too much time and sort of padding out absurdly and arguably pretentiously. And what happens at 18 minutes into episode 8, which is when the Roman police chief comes to Venice, and having interviewed Ripley as Dickie so many times, now interviews Ripley as Ripley. And we're meant to believe that this guy can put on a little bit of, costume glue and like a fake beard and a fake wig. And this guy, and like dim the lights of his apartment inspired by Caravaggio. And the inspector is not going to notice it's him. I mean, that was just laughable. So I think that the Mangala choice, which was to make it so that we get all the tension of this inspector coming from Rome, and we think that that Tom's going to be, his identity is going to be blown, but then at the last minute it's a different inspector. I think that works far better and far more elegantly. That said, I do like the coda. I like the little sort of the kind of epilogue when we think he's gotten away with it, and then Marge, who's played here to be so stupid and avaricious, like in a way, this version is trying to tell us is that it's Marge who's actually exploiting Dickie, which is kind of weird. There is a kind of fun coda with the chief inspector. So overall, I have to say I'm rather disappointed by this. I mean, it looks gorgeous, but to what end? I don't like the acting choices, not because the actors aren't good, but because I think they don't coalesce. There is no sexual tension in this. There's no sexiness. And I think it just jumps the shark in the final episode. Oh, but if you agree or disagree with my take, feel free to leave a comment on the YouTube channel or on the blog at beena007.com. I'd love to hear from you. In the meanwhile, thank you for listening.